when you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I will dry them all. I'm on your side, oh, when times get rough and friends just can't be found, like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down. When you're down and out, when you're on the street, when evening falls so hard, I will comfort you. I'll take your part, oh, when darkness comes and pain is all. Sail on, silver girl, sail on by, your time has come to shine, all your dreams are on their way, see how they shine, oh, if you need a friend, I'm sailing right behind, like a bridge over troubled water, I will ease your mind, like a bridge over troubled water, I will ease your mind.
Thanks a lot, Dan. That was wonderful. As usual. Well, welcome. Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Barbara Park. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm currently on the program committee, the Committee on Ministry, and the choir director once we get that started, which I hope will be very soon. Let's see. I should take this off so you can understand me. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We strive to welcome all, though we recognize that we have all have our biases that limit our understanding of how others may perceive us. We stumble in our efforts, but we commit to keep on trying to grow our ability to love people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender identity, family structure, age, or abilities. Okay, as usual, we have a few announcements and see the order of service for additional events. Our spring auction will be Sunday, April 3rd at 10 a.m. And we have a There's some copies floating around of some of the items that are up for auction, so you can maybe hunt one of those up. There's a link to submit offered items on both the Prairie website homepage and the service auction page. There's also a few of these forms. There's also a few paper submission forms available in the back hymnal cart, or at least that's what the script says. What exciting, useful, tasty, fun-filled things can you offer? Today is the deadline, so please submit your items. And you can also talk to Chris Porter, and Chris Porter is the one who had some of these to pass out. I don't know if you have any more, Chris, or not. Oh, they're passed out, she said. But you can find somebody with them, or there's one up here. Save the date for our annual retreat, April 29th to May 1st, at Bethel Horizons in Dodgeville. This is a wonderful family event. If you're interested in leading an activity, please fill out the form sent to Prairie News in the past week. Registration information will be coming soon. The nominating committee is currently seeking candidates to fill some key positions. We encourage you to please consider deepening your connection to Prairie by serving in one of these roles. The openings are president, at-large board member, youth board member, and nominating committee member. If you're interested in filling one of those openings, please contact the nominating committee via email, which is nominating@uuprairie.org. Also, another exciting thing is there is now a Zoom link out in the lobby. So if you need to step out, you know, this is the great thing for crying babies, but just if you need to go out for some other reason, there is, the service is being out on the, there's a screen out there, thank you, that is broadcasting the Zoom link. There's just a slight delay between what's happening here and what's out there. So I suppose the doors better be closed, because otherwise it'll be very confusing. Our opening words are by Terrence Lester, and they're read by Lynn Curry.
Escaping poverty among the physical barriers is difficult, but with the added emotional toll, it's almost impossible. It's not as simple as we'd like to think.
Thanks, Lynn. Okay, our opening music is in the Teal Book, 1021, Lean on Me. That should be under the seat ahead of you. And Dan is going to be accompanying us.
I don't think that we've sung this before, have we? Have we as a congregation? Okay. I'm going to take the liberty of doing it slightly differently from how it's printed. So we'll do the first verse and the second verse, and then we'll go to the part with the clapping at the end of the song. And so we attempt to get it right, we'll make it simple, and we'll go, just call on me, da 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 da. Okay? And actually, by rights, you wouldn't do the first clap, you just do the second, duh, duh, duh. But it's easier to do it two ways, so it'll keep us together, okay? And we'll do that, and then we'll go back to the third verse, sing that through, we'll do the clapping again, because that's the best part. And then we'll go to the third verse again, and we'll end. And we'll call, and after the words, if you just call me, we'll say, call me, call me. That'll be the end of the song, okay? It'll all be make sense. And the other thing is that I want everybody to make sure you sing Lean on Me. Lean on Me, I'll give you a little cue, okay? I can probably read this.
You can take your mask off, Dan, to corrupt there.
Oh.
People will hear you better, I think.
All right. Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain, we all have sorrow, but if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me when you're not strong. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long, but I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. Second verse, please call your pride if I have things you need to borrow, for no one can fill somebody to lean on. Just call on me, brother, when you need a hand. We all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you'll understand. We all need somebody to lean on. If there is a Lord, brother, when you lend a hand, we all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you understand. You all need somebody to lean on. Third verse. If there is a load you have to bear, that you
our chalice lighting is for each and for all by Eric Walker Wickstrom, read by Ken Wenger.
We light this chalice for all who are here and all who are not, for all who have ever walked through our doors, for those who may yet find this spiritual home, and for those we can't even yet imagine. For each of us and for us all, may this flame burn warm and bright.
Okay, today's story for all ages is Penguin's Big Adventure by Selina Yoon. After the book is read, we'll sing the children's recessional, which is on the inside of that gray Thacker hymnal on the back cover. This is a time when we welcome all younger people or those young at heart. Come up and listen to our story, and Alice is going to read it.
All right, it's called Penguin's Big Adventure. One day, Penguin had a big idea. He wanted to do something no penguin had ever done. He wanted to be the first penguin to ever set foot on the North Pole. Is it 12,436 miles away? Penguin planned and packed. He rolled up his adventure map and set off. But before his first mile, Penguin saw Emily sewing. "This looks like a very nice quilt," said Penguin, "and the brightest I've ever seen." Before Penguin reached his second mile, he saw his little brother, Pumpkin, weaving. "That is a fine basket, Pumpkin," said Penguin, "and the biggest I've ever seen." Right before his third mile, he saw Bootsy braiding the longest rope he'd ever seen. "Can I help?" "I don't want to tie you up, Penguin. You have so far to go." Then Penguin set off for the other side of the world while his busy friends worked on their own world records. Penguin passed through his favorite places and visited with old friends. He had a whale of a time, and he says, "Our friend, the knitting penguin." Finally, Penguin reached the North Pole. "I'm on top of the world," he says. Penguin threw confetti, turned cartwheels, and planted a sign. Penguin was here. "Hooray, hooray, hooray," Penguin shouted, and it echoed across the ice. Nobody answered. Penguin was suddenly lonely and afraid, but he was not alone. Penguin had never seen a polar bear. And the polar bear had never seen a penguin. It was scary. Penguin and polar bear smiled, and it wasn't so scary anymore. "Do you wear a black belt?" "No, I wear an orange scarf." "Do you have big, sharp teeth?" "No, but one might be coming in." Together, they went on a North Pole adventure. They went whale watching, built ice forts, and welcomed more visitors. Then it was time for the new friends to say goodbye. Penguin left Polar Bear his adventure map. He didn't need it anymore. Because the best part of having an adventure is coming home. And that's the end.
you may be filled with gladness. Go in joy, go in joy. May fortune bless your day with peace and loving kindness. Go in love, go in love. So our presentation today is Health Care and Homelessness, presented by Matt Julian, him, his. Matt Julian is a licensed clinical social worker that works on a social work and nurse street outreach team. Matt has a history of working with poverty, mental health, substance abuse, and healthcare related issues. This presentation relates to our second principle, justice, equality, and compassion in human relations. So welcome. Welcome, Matt. You probably need to put that up higher.
Thank you, Barbara. Well, first, I just want to say thank you for inviting me. It's always a privilege and an opportunity to really talk about the work we do. And I say we because, yes, I'm here kind of representing oftentimes the agency I work for and the different services I'm involved in the community, but it is certainly not me. You know, it takes a whole group of folks. I wanted to just start with a touch of honesty in the sense of I always get a little anxious when I'm asked to talk somewhere. And oftentimes it's very much because I feel like I need to impress you to give you the solution and to like send you on your way to do the next thing. And that's just my ego kind of jumping in, you know, trying to sway me off my path. And I really appreciated the reading early on, talking about how we're gonna have our stumbles. And by no means have I been perfect in this journey of mine, but I have an opportunity to learn and keep moving forward. And that's been a pretty awesome experience for me. And the other thing that I always have to remind myself is that, yes, I am an expert on the work that I do, but I am a novice in many areas. And it's up to me to continue to remain humble enough to learn. And even in the area that I work, I don't know everything. So I'm going to do my best today to just share a little bit about what we're doing in the community, some of the things that have worked, haven't worked, and maybe some hopes for the future. So with that said, to give you a little history about the health program itself. So the health program is an acronym for Helping Educate and Link the Homeless. It started in 2009. What we had then was Dr. Ranheim and a nurse, and they saw that they were seeing all these people coming in to the hospital, oftentimes without insurance, having multiple medical issues, oftentimes chronic medical issues, and they weren't getting the care they needed outside of the hospital. And they were coming to the ERs because that's where they wouldn't be turned away. So Dr. Ranheim jokes that the Affordable Care Act is what ultimately put us out of business. So after about 2 years of the program, we analyzed some data and we found that while the health program didn't necessarily reduce utilization of the ER, it reduced the costs. And part of that is because we were able to be more focused on the care we could provide, as well as provide services after they left the ER and the hospital because we had this walk-up clinic. So for those 2 years, the health program was really designed as a free walk-up clinic. It was over off of Fish Hatchery Road in the old St. Vincent de Paul parking lot. And then the nurse, so a provider would be there, you know, a few times a week to see folks, and there would be a nurse there on a regular basis providing triage services as well as doing outreach in the community to follow up with some of these folks. So after about 2011, though, they dropped the provider. And so the reason they dropped the provider was we were finding folks with the Affordable Care Act that we could enroll them in insurance. And because of the insurance, we could now help them access care. And so there wasn't as much as a focus of of needing to provide for folks who didn't have a provider. It's helped connecting folks to a provider. So it was just a nurse outreach program, and for a few years that's how it operated. And the nurse that left before me, Carlos, about seven years ago now, he recommended a social worker. And part of the reason that Carlos recommended a social worker was that he was feeling that he was doing a lot of kind of enrolling people in insurance and just helping them navigate the system. He was doing a lot less of the kind of the nursing triage care that he thought he had done previously. So with that, they came to find me. And so I've been very happy to be there. Part of the reason I should say that they focused on a clinical social worker is still many of our folks are disconnected from services. Just because, you know, we can get folks insured doesn't mean that they're going to be able to you know, jump in the front of the line, because there's still lines to get in a lot of services. And so they wanted someone with a LCSW for the purposes of signing off on some of these mental health related, it's called a verification of disability. And so many services around housing, some of the shelter services, a lot of the voucher services, they require what they call a verification of disability. And that can be both physical and mental health issues. The way that they describe it is, has it been kind of long-standing? Is it likely to continue? And does it affect their ability to obtain and maintain housing? And so this isn't necessarily like a state certification of disability. Someone may not qualify for disability through the federal government when we think of like Social Security income, but they may still qualify for these other services. And so that was kind of the purpose of our program. So the way that our program has come to be now is we're an ancillary service of Meritor. We provide inpatient consulting, we provide outpatient consulting, as well as doing community outreach. So I say this in the sense of, and I'm really clear about, like when I'm working in Meritor, that we are an ancillary service. I don't want to be a substitute, you know, for what someone is fully, like what their benefits say they're fully able, supposed to have, you know. Yes, I want to provide people medical care, but I want them to get the best medical care they can get, which is usually in a clinic. So I say that in the sense of like this is my ultimate goal, is to get people what's called a medical home. So a primary care doctor, they can go see specialists, they might have mental health related services involved, substance abuse related services, but we have a medical home for them now where they can kind of come first for some answers. But that's a big jump. So that's how our services are designed, is like we don't want to eliminate all these other services, but we want to be a part to help bridge that connection. And so I would say the principles of street medicine are about meeting people where they're at. It's about trying to remove judgment. It's about accepting folks, whether or not they're struggling currently, whether or not we agree with those struggles, whether or not we think they're making bad choices. These are things we have to remove. And I say those things because oftentimes when I speak to medical providers, we work in a system that there are inequities. And that's really hard as a person to sometimes acknowledge that, like, I am part of a system that has disparities. I do work that causes inequities. And so it's easy, when it's hard to hear that, it's easy to start blaming the person. It's easy to say, well, they made this bad choice. I offered these opportunities for them. So then it starts switching the blame. And it completely ignores the same fact that I'm struggling sometimes to be the best worker I can be, and it completely ignores that they're struggling to get through life. And so it's really important that I bring a sense of humility with me when I go. It's really important to know that although Meritor may, in these situations, have tried their hardest to offer this, this, and that, that that might not be the right solution for them today. You know, my solution is not always theirs. And I have to remember that. For many folks, there's a lot of trauma around homelessness. You know, it's easy to say, you know, you look at that hierarchy of need that Maslow has, and the basic needs are always kind of like food, shelter, and water. And I used to kind of talk about that, like, how can anybody, you know, kind of go through their goals when their initial goals are food, shelter, and water? Well, to be honest, like, I can, you know, you can stand in line here today and ask me where to get food, shelter, and water, and I can direct you to places all throughout town. That's still missing a big component. You know, it's not as simple as that basic needs. It's a sense of belonging, you know, a sense of well-being, a sense of comfort, a sense of choice. Like, these are things that folks that are homeless are often missing. They're in a system that kind of tells them where to go and where to be, and hopefully someday they'll make that big jump from where they're at to, you know, being independent and living, and, you know, and then also the thing I think our system oftentimes fail is when folks do make that jump, you know, they have blips, you know, blips where the struggles kind of come back up, where mental health decompensates maybe, or just frustration set in the place that you're living. And so they don't always have the privilege of not being monitored, you know, I think is the, it's a terrible way to put it, but I feel like the more in poverty you get in our society, the more monitoring as a community we tend to do on folks. And so that's a really hard, it's a really hard thing to kind of, to come at every day and see the stuff that's built up against folks. So I went off on a little tangent there, but the so to rewind a little, the way we have operated now for the last few years is that we were in a social work and nursing. We brought a nurse back into the program. So we do both of those now. We have, there are other agencies in town that have are doing with the provider again. And I will tell you that it's kind of like sometimes you don't know what you don't have until you see it. And I remember when they asked me if I needed a nurse, because we had a case management program. Its target was always kind of changing. And so they were like, we need to find something where we can put this nurse, where they can continue to do the good work that they're doing, but like not change their focus every 6 months. And so they asked, like, Matt, do you think you need a nurse? And I remember being kind of like, again, not very humble in the moment, like, I got this. I'm serving everybody just fine. You know, like, if this is, certainly I don't know medical stuff, but I am demonstrating that when I meet with a person. And there's some truth to that. So there is the truth that, like, yes, when someone comes to my, might come see me at the shelter or when I'm on the street and they ask me a medical question, I can say, I don't know, but we can call a clinic. And so, and sometimes that's an opportunity to get someone established with care, but sometimes it's just also an opportunity to teach them that, like, you can call your clinic and talk to your doctor's nurse. Like, they will provide us some feedback. And so, you know, but the way that always works is it doesn't always work well, you know? And so, you know, there's the reason we have the outreach program in the first place is because our systems are not designed to reach the hard-to-reach folks. And so that's often because there's no phone. That's often because their shelter might be the beacon today. It might be on the street tomorrow. It just depends on what they need. Like I said, the same things. Like, a beacon is a wonderful place. If you were there every day with 80 to 100-some people, it would be very, like, I would get frustrated and leave quite often. So a lot of folks need breaks. They need to find other places. They need to get some space. And so consistently have an outreach program that can kind of meet with folks, get an idea of their patterns of whether they're going maybe to the library or there's a particular place to hang out. That's a lot of the work that we do. So our goal is to find those folks, to work with them, to get them really to understand their providers, and to remove, like, the barriers that are getting in the way. And there's so many of those. For instance, I mean, just simply like, so the insurance, everyone would think before that the barrier was insurance. And the Affordable Care Act is here. And I can tell you that I can get about, I saw about 400 people last year, and over like 95% have insurance, or I'm able to get them insurance. But what we have seen with the data from the Affordable Care Act is people have now just kept going to the ER. Now, that's a little bit older data, but like, so right after the Affordable Care Act, they looked at this and ER utilization spiked. And because people were seeking care more often, it's just now they were seeking care where they knew they could get care because it's what they knew before. So our goal is to now help folks try to figure out, that they have other options. Because the ER, you know, they're sitting there for urgent and emergent reasons, you know. So sometimes for basic primary care, it's just not their area, you know. And so we're there to try to link folks and walk them through what that would look like. You know, I think of a guy early on, and this is, I think, a good example of the idea of like outreach versus a primary care home, is we had this gentleman, I knew him for a long time. I'd worked with him, we're cordial, we'd been building rapport, and he was seen by a medic clinic, which is a student-based run clinic in the shelters from UW, and they recommended he get a doctor, see a doctor. So he came, I saw him, we scheduled, he missed. So he went back to medic called me again, I saw him, we scheduled him, he missed the appointment again. So I go out and I see him and I'm like, hey man, like, what's going on? And he's like, Matt, I stink. And I was like, what? And he's like, I know I sleep outside, that I smell, I know that children come to your clinic, I'm embarrassed. And I said, oh, well, you should have told me, you know? And, I don't know, I'm using language to blame him. But I said, oh, well, let's work around that. And he's like, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, let's schedule you an appointment again. If it helps, we can get you some clean clothes. Maybe that's a day you can plan to go take a shower at the shelter. Or if you just want to come in as is, we'll accept you. I said, this is what our clinic looks like. If you tend to sit on this side, less people sit over there if that makes you more comfortable. If you want to come back to my office and wait to be roomed, you can come back to my office. And so we were able to get him in and to get services. And so for a lot of folks, our metrics would say, well, this guy just likes to no-show, you know, or he's irresponsible. But there was really more layers to that than we would typically think. So that's the purpose of our program. I feel like it's really to try to, you know, the idea behind street medicine should hopefully never be to replace the services, but it is a bridge. It's to go get to know someone, to see what it is that's driving them. And that's how we overcome the barriers. Like, I think of another fella. It oftentimes, like I said, like, I would love to sit here and tell you what we do is rocket science, but it's not, you know. It's just showing up. And so this is a system of folks that have often been marginalized already. You know, they've been declined services or treated poorly. People make promises and don't come through for them. One of the things that we do to try to provide, to break through some of that, is we show up. So we schedule some hours. And in this situation, I'd mentioned the Beacon prior, we were going to Bethel Lutheran on a regular basis. And with Bethel, they run a day shelter a few days a week. And so I was coming there, you know, once a week for months. And this guy had talked to me. We knew each other's names. We had conversations almost weekly. And it was about 4 to 6 months after I'd been coming there. And one day he saw, like, it was a slow day. I'm reading the news on my computer, and there's a little article about the Bears up in the corner. And he points out something and starts talking about football. And so, you know, I start talking about football with him. And finally he goes, so what do you do? And I remember being like, All right. So I said, well, I'm glad you asked. This is what I do. You know, I said, I try to connect people to healthcare. I try to get them the services they need. And then he goes, oh, I should probably talk to you. And I was like, oh, well, what's going on? And so at this point, he shared with me that he had MS and that he had not been received any care for years. And I said, well, let's get you into care, you know. And he openly shared, like, part of the reason he's avoiding care is he doesn't want to know how bad it's gotten. And I remember being like, all right, well, let's go through this. And so him and I, over the period of the next few months, scheduled multiple appointments that he did not go to. And I remember, like, thankfully, you know, again, our systems like to tell us, like, we need to get on this guy about missing appointments. And instead, I was remembering the fact of how scared he was. And there wasn't a lot I could do to alleviate that fear, you know? It's like, except share with him that I was there and that we'll try to figure it out, like, what happens next. And so, you know, I just kept showing up for him and being like, hey, man, you know, I saw you missed you. You want to reschedule? And he's like, okay. And so it's about the third or fourth time that he finally rescheduled and attended. And, you know, it wasn't as bad as he thought, but they did want to start some services. And so then that again, does its obstacles. He needed a regular injection. It needed to be refrigerated. How can we do this? How can we do that? And it's through those partnerships of, again, going to shelters, you know, being present on the street, that we're able to kind of build these connections with folks, and that we could get the shelters to typically, who might typically in the past not have said, like, refrigeration of meds is difficult, I'll just say. But considering his, there took some planning with a nurse case manager from the agency he was working with, because he was not a Meritor patient, and then working with the shelter, and then, you know, with getting him more connected with a housing case manager, so that eventually we had this, like, this idea that yes, this is hopefully a temporary solution in the shelter system, because we know this isn't ideal. And, you know, that guy is doing pretty well. He's actually been housed for a few years. I saw him recently the other week, and, you know, he's doing great. He's stayed consistent. He's had a few, like I said, obstacles that have come up, which is not uncommon. But, you know, we move through that. You know, we can't let, you know, maybe a poor decision today affect whether or not we're worthy of care tomorrow. And I think that's the big thing about the work that we do that makes a difference is we need to approach it with the fact that everyone is worthy, you know, that these, whether they sleep on the street or in the shelter, people are deserving of humanity and housing. You know, I had the privilege of looking through your guys' principles here, and I'd have to say that those would be great things for me to carry in each component of my life. Kind of the last thing, I know that we wanted time for questions, so I think I have a few more minutes, but then one of the things I wanted to touch on is based off a quote, and I say this in the sense of, it struck with me. So this is a quote from Robin DiAngelo from the book White Fragility. You know, Robin speaks about, throughout her book, about how she has been an educator on, you know, racial inequities her whole life. And she's also very self-reflective throughout this book of, like, where she's made mistakes. And so she ends the book by saying, I've been engaged in this work for many years, and I continue to receive feedback on my stubborn patterns and unexamined assumptions. It is a messy, lifelong process, but one that is necessary to align my professed values with my real actions. It is also deeply compelling and transformative. So that's the quote from Robin. And the way, what I usually try to take from that is like, it's, I oftentimes tell folks I'm an optimistic cynic. And I say that because we're in these systems. We are in these systems that are actively harming people today. But I'm optimistic because I've never met someone in this system that is looking to harm someone today. You know, I see hope. You know, I see an opportunity for love with a lot of the folks that I work with professionally, at work, but in the community. I'm inspired on a regular basis. And so I really like Robin's analogy there, is that in the sense that, like, I have to continue to see criticism. I need to continue to listen to it, to bring it into my life. But then I also need to make changes. I can't rest on my laurels of that my intentions were simply to do good. And when I look back at my life, I have been on the wrong side of history with many of my opinions. And that can define me today as a person. Or I can look back and be fortunate that I had friends, coworkers, I've had patients that have taught me to see things in a different way. And so just by trying to be open to some of that criticism, but again, find that compassion, that empathy, is really what I strive towards. I should probably end, but I guess I'll make one more note. And I've read a few books lately, in these books, there's been some similar themes. This idea of, and they use the term radical, like radical compassion and radical empathy. And when I see that, I was kind of like, why is this? First I was actually like, this is awesome. And then I was like, why radical? Why is it so radical for me to seek empathy with others and compassion? And, you know, in that reflection, I often see the the competition that we are often put into in our lives of, you know, whether it's a title or achievements or yada, yada, yada. And so it kind of goes against some of that grain, you know, that idea of, like, we need accolades. And instead, it's about seeing other folks. It's about understanding that I probably don't know everything that went through their heads today. I need to stop making assumptions. So it is radical in the sense that it goes against kind of my nature at times to try to prove that I'm better than someone else. But really, it shouldn't be radical at all. And it takes practice. And so I really welcome the opportunity to come speak, because it's oftentimes a great time for me to reflect on, as Robin said, what my professed values are and what my real actions are, because oftentimes those are incongruent. And so it's a good way for me to kind of reassess that and steer myself back to a better direction. So I really, like I said, I guess I'll stop rambling at this point. I really appreciate the opportunity of you guys letting me come out and share about what we're doing.
Yeah, thank you so much, Matt. Just stay right there. It's time for our time to have discussion or questions, comments. And we have to remember, I'll take that off so you can hear me better, that we also have friends on Zoom. So we have changed our procedures just a little bit. If you have a question or comment, we appreciate your coming up so that the people on Zoom can see who's talking. Remember to introduce yourself and share your pronouns, because that's very inclusive. And for the people who are on Zoom, if you want to ask a question, you can write it in the comment section, and our Zoom coordinator, who today is Mary Mullen, will read those out for you. If you're not able to or uncomfortable coming up, just raise your hand and Nancy has a mic that she'll bring to you. So, Andy.
You know, first I want to thank you. My name is Andrew, or Andy, I guess, and my pronouns are he, him, his. I see that you're very emotional about this, and it really means a lot to you. What brought you into this profession? You know, what is your background that got you to where you are?
Well, thanks for the question. I mean, what, I don't know, you know? Like, so I'm in recovery. So I can say that, and that was what launched me kind of initially. Is I was a chef, and when I got into recovery, I found that the days that I felt most at ease was when I was volunteering at a clinic that had helped me, and then I just wound up in it. Like I wish I could tell you what happened, but I went back to school. I was like, I'm going to be a psychologist, and I signed up for the wrong thing and ended up with a social worker. And so then I'm like, I'm going to check with both. And then at the end of that, I was like, well, maybe I'll go somewhere else. And someone's like, well, maybe you should go to grad school. And I was like, Mom, I'm not smart enough for that. And he's like, you'll be all right. And it's just been if you would have asked me, 10 years ago, I would have told you I wanted to work with adolescents that struggle with addiction, which is what, like I said, kind of brought me here. I found that I really enjoy working with folks. I am a person of privilege. I would tell you that, you know, I don't think my parents, I'd like to tell you my parents didn't raise me to like look differently, but they also didn't have us examine it. So like throughout my life, I didn't necessarily see these things. And as I became more aware of like all of these like things that I'm supposedly an ally for and ways that I'm counteractive to them. Like it's tremendously rewarding for me. So I enjoy the opportunity to continue to like learn and just feel like I have a connection, you know. So
I'm Chris Porter, she, her. And I was just wondering, have you found that because you guys being involved, that doctors are a little bit more accepting of rescheduling of appointments, or have you found doctors that work particularly well with homeless? Or?
So, I mean, the answer to that question is both yes and no. Meritor is a system, this goes for all systems, so like I said, the criticism, but like we were going to implement this no-show policy a while back, and it was pretty cool to see a lot of the staff, at first from our department, you know, which we're a bunch of social workers and like nurses that love people, so like we're always like, don't do that, you know, like this no-show policy is going to harm people. But then the doctors also said, like, hey, I want to see people. Like, this person, like, you know, I remember I have a guy who was significantly mentally ill, chronic heart failure, you know, distrust of the system. There was lots of reasons he didn't want to come. But when he would come, we could make drastic changes in his life. And so, like, literally, we can add years to this guy's life. And so and our doctor was very much like, you know, we'll take them when we can get them. And so I generally find that the doctors have been great. It's the business part of the systems that often tends to gear us towards, you know, I think one of the funniest examples is usually like, Matt, this guy is over 50. You've got to get him in for a colonoscopy. And I'd be like, I think we got bigger fish to fry today with him. Like, you know, like, and so, and again, like, so it's really cool to see. I think a lot of the doctors, they're good folks. It's a system to work within. I really enjoy that with the doctors. I do think we do have to work better at finding our voices, because sometimes, you know, the social work team isn't enough, and like the doctors have more power. It does. I do think that, like, I have power being, like, the only homeless outreach program for the hospitals in all of the area. So UW and St. Mary's call me. And I can, you know, sometimes challenge some of their discharge planning and, like, help walk them through what that's really going to look like. And so it does help kind of change some of those systems.
Well, we could take one more short question. Go ahead.
Thanks, Matt, for your efforts. Randy Converse, he, him. My question for Matt is actually a comment that I'd like him to respond to. That the homeless population in Madison are more cared about than other marginalized groups.
Well, that's so. In many ways, I could probably agree. I always like to tell folks, I remember, so I was listening to a talk show, a local talk show that was reading the pamphlets of services that are available to homeless folks in our community. And they were going on and on about these services, but there was no insight to, like, how available those services are. You know, and what those tend to, like, what that tends to look like for someone trying to access those services. So, I wouldn't be up here to ultimately debate if one service is, or one marginalized group is being served more than others. I think as a community, we need to do better. I can certainly point to some good things like that Meritor does. You know, the work that we do is good, but we need to be better. And that goes for homelessness, that goes for the race disparities we see in health outcomes. We certainly need to do better in all of the areas. So, I guess that'd be my initial response.
Mary, did you want to do one quick one?
I just wanted to pass on Reverend Matt Aspen's remarks.
I just wanted to pass on Reverend Matt Aspen's remarks. He said, I just want to extend my thanks to the speaker for the work they're doing in the community. I think we probably all feel that way.
Thank you so much, Matt. We appreciate your talk and the work that you're doing. Now's our time for our offertory. Whoops, helps with glasses on right side up. We're sharing our offering this quarter with the Tenant Resource Center, which is dedicated to promoting positive relationships between rental housing consumers, that is tenants, and providers, i.e. landlords, by providing information and referrals, education about rental rights and responsibilities, and access to conflict resolution. And while we're doing that, Dan is going to sing "There But For the But For Fortune" by Phil Oakes.
Show me. Show you a young man with so many reasons.
Thanks, Dan. We appreciate your doing the music today. The closing words are, when life gets hard, try to remember the life you complain about is only a dream to some people. We're going to end with a song. It's 10:59 in the Teal Book. May your life be as a song.
This is a, I think it's an intended as a round, but I'm not sure we. I know this is new to me, and we don't have that many of us here. I think maybe we'll just sing it together rather than as a round, and get to know it a little bit better. Times, okay?
Done that as a round before. I think we could have pulled it off. Yeah. Now's the time we stop the recording because of being on Zoom.